Breaking the Panel is made possible by you and other listeners just as awesome as you are. If you want to support the show and get a little something in return, just go to patreon.com/breakingthepanel, because we do appreciate the help.
And this month, being January, is theme is Origins, and you're going to get Superman, Captain America, Mario, and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Now, here's a note. What if all four of those were originated the same way? You pick one, you know, pick Super Serum, pick Ooze. That'd be hilarious if Superman got his power from Ooze, right, Chris? You would love that, wouldn't you?
Well, didn't he? Because when a Kryptonian mother and a Kryptonian father love each other.
Oh, my God!
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're Breaking the Panel.
And welcome to Breaking the Panel. We do some awesome stuff about some other awesome stuff. We're just going to have some fun doing it. It's the first show of the new year. So why bother with all the introductions? We'll just jump right in. Right? No? Okay. I can do my... Are y'all going to play with me today? Are you going to be the... No, we don't want the cool names, dude. You do some cool stuff. We just don't like it.
Well, you have yet to give us cool names.
Yeah.
I'm the right kind of podcast with Charles McFall. And the people who have yet to earn their cool names is Mr. Unleaded himself, Chris Wisdom.
Hey.
And... this one's premium for the high-end lady, Paul Klotz.
Oh, hello.
He likes that one. Oh, hey. Oh, yeah, that's me. That's me. I'll take that.
Yeah, I'm super expensive and usually worth it.
There you go. I like it. So, hey. We have gotten some feedback on the show. You know how much we love the feedback, and it's another discussion point. And again, it's something that gets talked about, or maybe doesn't get talked about enough, but we like talking about some social issues. Chris, why don't you read this note from our episode on our webpage?
All right, this comes from listener Jeffrey James. He says, nice to hear a new voice on the panel. Quick note about the Cho Swinton controversy. As I understand it, some of the controversy was connected with the feeling that some people, including Cho, have about being considered a go-to person representing their ethnicity. Why should Cho have to field questions about racial casting from somebody whom she doesn't know, or even from somebody she does know? Even if Cho is vocal on these issues, it's a bit weird for somebody out of the blue to email you and, in effect, ask for your blessing for whatever you perceive as proof of your lack of bigotry. In a way, just formulating the question as, I'm not good friends with anybody Asian, so I'll ask a random Asian person whether I'm being racist, is a somewhat racist way of thinking. It's almost like saying, gee, they all look alike, so they must all think alike too. Also, there's a little bit of, if I can get a random Asian celebrity to say it's okay that I took the role, then it must be okay for me to take the role. Huh. Swinton would have been better advised to just do some research on the perceived problem and formulate a response that would stand on its own merits rather than looking for a token absolution. I'm a bit sensitive to this issue because as the white father of two black children, I've made the mistake of assuming that I have the right to ask random black people their opinions of various parenting situations. After receiving half a dozen WTF responses, I figured out the strategy itself was offensive.
Well, I will tackle this first a little bit. I agree. Overall, finding your own way, researching the problem, getting your own answer is the best way to tackle life in general. Secondly, are you sure they're not the mailman's kids? Because, you know, I'm just checking, dude. Nah, if Jeffrey's listening to the show, he's now we're just playing with him. We're just poking. This first part, the Cho Swinton controversy, I think we can each tackle these as we go down. But it seems like his perspective was that Swinton reached out to Margaret Cho. Was that the case? For some reason, it seemed like Cho reached out to Swinton, but I could be wrong on that.
No, it was Swinton reached out to Cho.
Okay.
Okay. Jeffrey, with respect, I'm going to analyze some of your feedback here. Let's start with the topic of somebody like Cho who is outspoken about the controversies, not just this one, but like the whole idea. Should she be considered like an ambassador of the topic for her community? And that apparently she has reservations about it as well as others. And it's, that's kind of a really mixed bag because it's like, on one hand, I totally get why we shouldn't just assume that a few prominent names in a community represent the whole community. White people would be just as
right.
victim to that, especially like right now in the political situations we have going on in this country. I mean, if you were to handpick a couple white people in this country and say they represented all white people in this country, many of us would be very upset. You know, so I get that 100%, and I even agree with it. However, the reality is, and I'm reminded of, again, politics a little bit, of the protests a few years back in New York City, and then, you know, that went everywhere, where, you know, there was an attempt for the movement to have a leaderless movement. And, you know, people were protesting a number of different issues. And the biggest criticism that was lobbed at them more than anything else was just like, well, you don't have any focus, you know, you don't have right. a focused leadership. You don't have someone who's representing the agenda, you know, the goal that you want to accomplish. And I agree with that as well. You know, it's nice to go out and say, hey, I'm going to go, you know, march or sit someplace or picket someplace about a certain topic, or in the case of this situation in Hollywood, I'm going to go talk about, you know, this lack of good roles for my community. That's fine, but you have to accept the fact that if you do that enough, people are going to start to see you as a leader of that, you know, that
fair movement, enough.
That agenda. And
now I know we addressed it because of the direct controversy of Cho essentially calling Swinton out from the right. email, and it was being misrepresented in an interview. Mm-hmm. And that's the only reason we really talked about was here's the full story. But I will give Jeffrey this, rather, his two first names, so you know what do you know. But I'll give him this. I mean, I agree with you, Klotz. I mean, if you speak out enough about it, people will see you as a leader. But on a generic note, no, we the three of us are, well, okay, two and a half of us are white guys. You know, Chris has some other heritage in there, but no, I don't ever want to have somebody come up to me of any race, white or otherwise, and go, what's wrong with white people? I don't have the time in the year to get started on that. Okay,
I mean, the valid you response know. Is what isn't, right?
Yeah, it's like, well, exactly, what isn't wrong with white people?
So you're too busy answering for what's wrong with Georgians, but okay.
So I agree with his first statement of she never should have to answer things about race. And yes, well, okay, I've done that with lesbians. I actually hit up a lesbian. It's like, hey, if I look at a lesbian's butt, is that still sexist? And she's like, well, the fact that you're having to ask pretty much tells you the right answer. I'm like, all right, fine. What were you going to say, Klotz?
But, see, I have to challenge that. Okay. So the way I perceived this conversation went down is, you know, Tilda said that she's a fan of Margaret Cho. You know, she said, listen, I'm a big fan. She reached out to her representation and said, hey, I'd like to, you know, would it be okay to have a conversation? And now keep in mind the timetable on this, because there were date stamps on the emails, was she had already taken the role, and I believe she was pretty much already in the middle of filming or probably had already finished. So this wasn't a should I take this role, should I consider not taking this role conversation. This was a there's controversy surrounding this character and this role, and she was reaching out for, like, as you're saying, further research. I mean, the thing is, the one of the best ways to understand something is to reach out to the people who are affected and ask them what they think, you know? And so I think in that respect, her motivations were noble. They were, I want to reach out to somebody I see as a prominent name in that community, someone who is vocal about this issue. You know, I'm going to reach out to somebody who should, you know, by all measurements in our society, be considered someone who's at least qualified to discuss it a bit. You know, if I wanted to know about economics, I would try to go speak to an economics professor or an economist or, you know, possibly even a consultant on Wall Street or something. You know what I mean? I wouldn't, like, just ask a random person. So I would go find somebody who's involved, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And I think with social issues, it's still the same thing. You're just in, there's a way to go about it. And I think she did largely go about it that way. Go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, she did say that she's not on social media. She doesn't. Mm-hmm. And honestly, to me, that was a better way. Let's talk to a real person who seems to be willing to discuss these kind of issues, or is one of the supposed, maybe she couldn't get a hold of George Takei, because I know at that time he was one of the forefront mouthpiece is the wrong phrase here.
No, it's fair.
But he was speaking out as for Asians in these, you know, they're not getting the roles. Maybe she couldn't get a hold of him. I mean, that's the thing. If you take your celebrity and you speak out, I think you are you're expressing an openness to discussion, perhaps. Perhaps. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I mean, reading back through with this with Jeffrey, and he comes from a personal standpoint on it, I can see his, I definitely can see Jeffrey's take on this.
Well, I do agree if, like,
off.
He says if you're asking for a blessing or, you know, what, or a hand
right, wave, right, yeah.
I just don't think in this specific instance that that's what was going on based on reading those. She was looking for information and perspective, not an approval. You know, she wanted information back from Cho, and she even asked Cho, like, if you want to put me in contact with your friends or people you know who are involved with this as well, I'm open to infer, you know, basically she was communicating is the way I saw it, not looking for a nice hand wave, you know, here's your sticker that says that you're an approved friend of the Asian, you know, actors community,
right,
and you're allowed to, you know, take an Asian role away from us. I mean, that would be wrong.
And honestly, you know, he relates it to asking, you know, black people about, or random black people. Well, random is the wrong way to do it. Man. It should have been friends of the family or something. But random people. And instead of getting a WTF response, you should have gotten a, you know, hey, they're your kids, you'll figure it out response. Because every kid is different. And that's the thing here, too, is what happened in the email. And here's the reason we brought it up originally, was in the email, it was very much you're asking because you're looking for somebody connected to the community, and they had a discussion. But then what was represented wasn't that. And I think that was a part of that discussion. And honestly, I think that might have what touched Jeffrey James, because I got to imagine people probably treated him poorly. Mm-hmm. I got treated poorly asking some basic parenting advice when I had my first kid. But I got to tell you, Jeffrey, you know, you want some parenting advice, you can always ask me, man. I'll tell you what I do with my kids.
Don't.
They ain't like anybody else's kids. But the fact is, with to his response, I want to hear what Chris has to say, but I think you're right, Klaus. I don't think she was looking for a blessing. I think she went and did the role. Because, I mean, it's evidenced by she read the comics. She talked about how actually racist it was of the Ancient One in the first place, how they drew him in the 60s and whatever time period. And how she was trying to bring a different role. Basically, she also identified with, there are no roles for her. White, older, Scottish ladies.
Right.
You know? So there was definitely some back and forth. And I think this response, to me, is a good indicator of what our show does. It's, we all interpret things through our own personal filter. But we hope to open up this, that discussion of, get your viewpoint in and we'll discuss it and help out. What's your thoughts, Chris?
I think one of the main things we're missing here is his point of view isn't invalid. And I see where he's coming from. But the problem is the opposite side of what's going on is he is still asking Tilda Swinton and by extension Scarlett Johansson to explain why white people are getting roles. So you're going to the focal point of a singular white person and saying, okay, now answer for white people. When in reality, it needs to be the director and the producers that have to answer for those, because Tilda didn't hire herself. She went and read for a job if she had to do that. They may have had her in mind and just asked her if she wanted to do it, which is typically what happens with like Scarlett Johansson. But, it's the same thing as being done in the opposite. And that's where we have to really watch ourselves in these social issues. This is why people that are against affirmative action can gain such traction, is because they cry reverse racism, and it's not always 100% inaccurate. You know, in application, in theory, it shouldn't be, but in application, it very easily can turn into that. It's these slippery slopes that you have across the board in any conversation. You have to watch for these things, and you can't cry foul in one instance when you're doing it to the opposite side of the spectrum. And that's what I kind of feel like has gone on in the last year. These are people that are just working, man. You can't blame them for making a little cheddar.
Yeah,
it's not like
now to Well, to your point, I saw a preview for some, okay, according to Facebook, I did zero research, but I'm about to be a little controversial. According to Facebook, Tyler Perry has a new film coming out, and it's either all or mostly white people. And his style is unattractive to me. It's not like, oh, I want to go see Tyler Perry films. I see why people like them. I see why they make money. I actually know friends who literally have been like one of the starring roles on his Broadway, blah, 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 blah. So I get it. I get the connection to the community. I get why people like it. It's not for me. But I do know the Madea films, all this, they're high energy. Their attitude, their personalities, they're full of maybe stereotypes, but they're full of personality and life. And then I see this clip that supposedly his next film is two white girls, two sisters, fighting over a guy. And it's the dullest, most drug out scene ever. And I'm like, you know, instantly my brain went, does he hate white people? I don't understand. I mean, there was no life to that scene whatsoever. Now, it could not have nothing to do with Tyler Perry. It could be somebody trolling the internet, right? Trying to drag his name through the mud or something. But my backup to Chris is, if we don't understand that we're looking at it through our own filters, our own life experiences, which are somewhat closed in. I mean, very few people become those big world travelers and really open up to tons of community. We all typically operate in what we were raised in and where we came from. And we have to understand that that's our filter. We can then start removing the filter and start seeing some other things. Because I think there are many great Asians out there who can do some amazing acting. And there's been a few times I went, why didn't you cast this person? Because this person would have killed this role.
Right.
Not with Tilda Swinton, but in other places. But I heard your thoughts. What you got?
Well, no, I was just going to say, oh, man, you went a little far. I lost my little train of thought.
Sorry.
Well, basically,
I was wondering if he hated black and white people.
I was going to say, you know, take, for example, Chris Rock. Chris Rock made a career. First of all, he's one of the funniest people
that
we've ever been, you know, we've ever been blessed with. But he has some pretty scathing social commentary, and he's not afraid to bite into his own community. He's not afraid to mock, you know, white people and the way white people behave. And I mean, that's a common thing in comedy. We analyze the stereotypes because there's something to them. Let's be real. You know, to quote, you know, the Nightly Show, let's keep it 100. Mm-hmm. Stereotypes exist for a reason. You know, people from the same social and ethnic groups tend to behave similarly because they came up in the same traditions. So when we're trying to be cognizant of that and we're trying to adapt and be open to, you know, new cultures and try to treat everybody fairly and treat everybody equally and give everybody the opportunities and the, you know, the voice that everybody else has, it's important that we have dialogues where we dig in and say, all right, well, you know, how is this handled in your community? How is this handled in our community? You know, Charles, I know you've dealt with it in some religious circles, you know, like mm-hmm. That's another thing. There's lots of branches of Christianity, and, you know, America is a country full of all of these different branches of Christianity. How one religious group handles their worship and their beliefs is very different than other groups. And sometimes you have to reach out and ask, you know, like, I mean, go to a Southern Baptist church and then go to a, you know, a New England Catholic mass. They're wildly different. And that's fine. And you can even celebrate it. And sometimes people find that refreshing as well. You know, so it's I know I've watched a number of comedians over the years, you know, analyze their own communities, analyze other communities, be honest about it, too. You know, like, you know, the joke is in the Asian American community that Asian parents are really hard on their kids. And that's not inaccurate. It's a common theme. We see it over and over again. But, you know, things are changing and we're seeing times are adapting and all that kind of stuff. So it's important to be aware of these kind of things, and you can laugh at it a little bit. In the case of this isn't so much a laughing matter. It's more of a, well, was it appropriate for this actor or actress to take a role? And I agree with what Chris said. You know, it absolutely falls on the studio. And the people, the casting director and the director and, you know, the people who make the hard calls, you know, because it's not the actors that are in the film that make those calls about who, you know, they just go out for a job. And, you know, like I said, the last time we talked about this, you know, you got to find work. You know, it's out there. You just got to be willing to take it. So,
and that's the thing too. People like Tilda Swinton, theoretically, she probably never has to work another day in her life. If she managed her money well, she's done well with her career, whatever. But there's also other levels of actor and actresses, and we don't know her life, maybe. And who is to deny her her love of her craft, right? Let her choose her path. But are we really asking for somebody who maybe needs to pay some bills? Maybe he's up and coming. Chris Pratt, right? I would say he's probably set now, but when he first hit the scene, he was the hot property. He was up and coming, and he had bills to pay, right? Who's to ask him, hey, turn down this quote-unquote role because you think a minority would play it better? You know, even if he turned it down, he can't control who gets that role. And why are we asking people to turn down roles based on social obligation when they literally need to? If you don't work, you don't do crap in Hollywood, honestly. You're only as good as your next big project in Hollywood. And if you don't work, you don't get paid.
Chris Pratt's a really good example because Chris Pratt almost didn't get the Parks and Rec job. You know, he auditioned for a different part, if I recall correctly, and I might be corrected here. Somebody might call in or write in and say, hey, no, you got this wrong. But I remember there being something. He was, you know, up for a different role, and he nailed – he was so funny in the interview, you know, in the audition, that they're like, we've got to find a spot for him. Oh, no, that's right. It's season one. He was supposed to be written off the show originally. Mm-hmm. He's going to be around. He's going to be what's her name's
Karen?
Boyfriend for – yeah, for you know, the season,
that first season.
They were going to write him off, but he was so funny, and he had such an impact on the set, and he had such an impact when they, you know, improvised and all that kind of stuff, that they're like, we have to keep him on. And it's happened a number of times with various comedies, especially when people have been kept around because they're just so exceptional. We have to remember that actors and actresses, this is art too. I mean, yes, it's a paycheck. And, you know, you look at something like the Avengers films, and we've got a guy, Robert Downey Jr. doesn't have to work again, right?
Right.
But he was also a guy who almost didn't have a career anymore. And, you know, he got lucky, and here we are, and now he's one of the biggest names in Hollywood again. And, you know, he's in these ensemble casts where other people who have names almost as big as his aren't getting anywhere near the pay he's getting. So there's a position where that's somebody you can look at and say, well, okay, can we address that? And he has, you know what I mean?
Right.
When he did Age of Ultron, he renegotiated contracts so that to make sure that everybody else got more. I mean, he still got the lion's share, but they got more than they were getting before, if I recall correctly. You know, so there's – and in the case of Chris Pratt, when he went out for Star-Lord, they're like, you got to lose a boatload of weight, dude.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, that's another thing is it's like he almost didn't get a job because he didn't look the part. You know, he didn't meet our expectations of the physique of somebody like that in a film, you know, that kind of film. So there's a lot of complicated social and just hard, you know, hard line stuff that comes into all of this kind of these things. And it's important to be aware of that, I think, and just realize that it's not always somebody's fault, even though it looks like it. Thanks for the feedback, Jeffrey James. Absolutely. I mean, we had a nice, good, long talk about this one.
Now, the way you can get us some feedback, he went to the webpage. It is giantsizeteamup.com/breakingthepanel, and he commented on the post there. You could also go there and leave a speak pipe message where we can play it. You can email us at btp@giantsizeteamup.com. That's B as in breaking, T as in the, P as in panel, btp@giantsizeteamup.com. Now, Chris, you found a quick headline before we just get into catching up. You know, we haven't actually caught up with each other in a couple of weeks of just discussing just generic, fun, geeky stuff. So we're going to do that this show. But you found a news headline you wanted to talk about, Chris, before we move on.
So Gareth Edwards, the director of Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, was interviewed recently by Empire Magazine. And so this is his...
Wait. So the Empire is putting their spin on this.
Yes, they
are.
Yes, yes, yes. This is not fair and balanced.
We're not going to get the truth.
This is not fair and balanced.
Right. Those Skywalkers are evil.
So this is just his blunt reaction to trailer scenes not showing up in the movie. And it kind of is telling to some other issues that we've had throughout the year. So what he says is there was a bit of process to refining the third act in terms of specific shots and moments, and so certain things just fell away. But then what happens is marketing loves those shots and go, oh, we've got to use that. And you say, well, it's not in the movie, And then they say, it's okay, it's what marketing does. We just use the best of whatever you've done. And so there's lots of little things, but towards the end you go, I know that's not in the film, but it's in the spirit of the film. So he kind of explains it away, and, you know, because where Rogue One's concerned, everybody thinks about the scene in the trailers with the TIE fighter facing Jyn Erso down on that catwalk. And that appeared nowhere in the movie, unfortunately. We'd like to see that. But I think it's more telling of what we've been talking about basically this entire year since, you know, BVS and Suicide Squad. So much of the movie that's in the trailer doesn't end up in the movie. And we want to know how and why that happens to the degree that it's happening to. And right there, based on that comment, it's they know it happens and they don't care because it's in the spirit of the film. Well, yeah, that's cool, but that's not in the film. And if I try to sell you a bottle of Lysol cleaner, but then I just sell you a bottle of bleach, I'm like, well, it's a cleaning product, right? You paid $5 for the bottle of 2 cent bleach, but that's okay. It was in the spirit.
It's the same.
Yeah.
What were you saying, Claude? Sound like you had an input.
I'm really disappointed in his response to this. We talked about this.
Chris has had bad responses before, but it's okay.
No. I mean, to Gareth Edwards, we've talked about this before. I mean, we had a letter before where, you know, we were asked if we thought it was false advertising. Yes. Right. I mean, come on. Like, it's one thing if like a little scene is cut, but some of these scenes are like these trailer scenes are largely I mean, this showdown between the TIE fighter and Jyn Erso is iconic. That was a moment we expected to see. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Seeing Krennic on the beach, the dialogue that we see from Saw Gerrera, these are iconic moments in the trailers that got our blood pumping, got us excited, got us to show up and put our money down on the counter and go see this film. Now, I enjoyed the film. Don't get me wrong. I had a great time. I loved it. I've seen it twice. You know, and I think a lot of people who do have complaints are really reaching for them. It was a good film. But stop selling me this line. Like, no, that's not the way it works. Make trailers that represent your final product. Because if you keep doing this, people like myself, you know, us, we're going to keep talking about it. And when people ask my opinion, I'm going to tell them that I think it's crap. You know what I mean? And there's going to be a point where we all, you know, it's one of those things where you just keep bombarding people with stuff that doesn't come to fruition and they stop trusting it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, it's a little bit what we're dealing with the news media in this country. You know, people ever since the 24-hour election or not election, news cycle has been a thing for the last 25, 30 years. It has desensitized us towards this information. You know what I mean? We're bombarded with these hyper-sensational headlines all the time and these articles, like we were talking about clickbait, you know? As somebody who's spent most of my adolescent and adult life on the internet, I'm not fazed by clickbait very often anymore. I mean, sometimes I click it knowing that it's not going to be what it's representing itself as. That's a problem. Stop doing that. Represent your product fairly. You know, don't put scenes in your trailers that aren't in the freaking movie. Like, I'm really fired up about this, as you can probably tell, because it's really annoying to just see the director be like, we felt bad about it. And then we're like, no, we don't feel bad about it anymore. And it's like, well, then I have no faith in you anymore. You know, you've told me that I don't have to trust you and I shouldn't. And so I don't, you know, and it's like, that's really unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. The first time that happened to me was, I think, Titan AE. And, you know, give me the grief you're going to give, but they actually used a Creed song in the trailer and it fit the scene perfectly. And I went to see that movie in the theaters. This is what, mid-90s. And not that I was looking for it specifically, but I noticed immediately there was no music in that scene, actually, in the movie. It just went, and I was like, it took me out of the film. I was like, I don't need to have that, but I kind of wanted it. You taught me it's going to be there. But then there's the flip side to this, right? There's Deadpool, where he had so many – Ryan Reynolds had so many great one-liners. They used as much as they could in the previews. So you saw one preview that said, don't leave me here with something about a roided up Jose Canseco. There's another line, and ultimately went with the less angry Rosie O'Donnell one in the final cut. But we kind of knew after seeing these trailers, the exact same scene had different lines. We knew that they were feeding us what they weren't using in the film, and we liked it. But that is not the same as a TIE fighter.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's the thing, is to me, that's actually in the spirit of the film. And that's just different takes of the same scene. You're still going to get that scene. You might not get that exact line, but you're getting that scene in the movie.
Yeah, because some of the things that were omitted that were in the trailers that were not in Rogue One would have drastically shifted the plot, like dramatically changed the timeline, the sequence of events. That is because while you're watching it, if you're like in the back of your mind, you're like, well, you know, in the trailer I saw this one scene and it never happened. It's like, so when's that going to happen? When's it going to happen? Why didn't it happen? You know what I mean? And it's like, some movies are exceptional, and it's like, all right, like this was a movie that by the end of it, I was like, I'm pretty sure there were some things that I saw in the trailer that didn't show up in the movie, but that was such a good movie. And I was just like, you know, I wasn't dwelling on it until later. But you know, so it's just one of those things. But yeah, like something like Deadpool, it's like that alternate takes, you have to have a place to showcase those anyways. So that's, you know, just as good. I mean, it happened with Suicide Squad. We talked about it then. Like, there were a couple of one-liners in the Suicide Squad trailers that never showed up in the film. And that was kind of like, I mean, yeah, it sucked, but it didn't completely change the plot of the film. Though it did change the tone, because we were sold a certain tone and then we didn't get it, you know? That's another thing, is like, you represent your film one way. Actually, here's a good example, is Passengers, the Chris Pratt, Jennifer Lawrence film. If you see the trailers for that, it's represented as like a romantic comedy with a sci-fi, you know, icing on the cake. I haven't seen it, but my understanding is that the plot is a little bit darker, a little bit more insidious than that. You know, it's not as cutesy as implied.
And well, I actually kind of get that from the current trailers. It's a dark sci-fi.
Well, it's like even the reason that Jennifer Lawrence is awake is kind of a creepy. When I found that out. Well, because like Chris Pratt in the movie, he's like a maintenance guy. For some reason, he wakes up and he sees her and starts obsessing over her. He wakes her up so he doesn't have to be alone. Right. And that's stalker to the extreme. And who knows what story he told her.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That is not the movie that's being represented in those trailers. You know, it's being, you know, sold as a rom-com. You know, it looks like it might be a kind of fun twist on the weird sci-fi storyline that it's representing, but that's not necessarily the case at all, and that's kind of screwed up. You know, it's I'm always reminded of I used to work with a guy a number of years ago, a good buddy of mine. He was lied to about The Ring, like the nature of The Ring. Somebody was talking about that movie and said they thought it was hilarious because that person was, you know, a horror nut that like thought all of the big scares in that film were funny. And he told the story that way. He's like, oh yeah, I laughed so hard. And so my friend went to go see it and he's sitting there, he's expecting it to be, you know, probably a lot more like the Scary Movie films than it was like The Ring. The way he told it is, he says, you know, I was so angry, I was ready to kill somebody in the middle of that movie. To which I quickly responded with 7 days, and then that's the thing, is that you can misrepresent something and then let somebody walk into it expecting something and get bombarded with something completely different, which is fine if the expectation for that is set. You know, like if I go to an M. Night Shyamalan movie, I know that everything will not be as it appears. That is the expectation.
That's what I love about it.
Yeah. But we know that it's not The Sixth Sense wasn't represented as like a buddy cop comedy, you know, like it was
right.
It was represented as a serious film with a serious tone.
Well, that line that came out of the film, "I see dead people," is in the trailer, but he led with that.
Yeah.
And if he leads with the one key line that's going to be said by a million people for a freaking year, then you know he's got more up his sleeve.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, that's all I'm saying is, like, Gareth Edwards, could you not?
Yeah.
Like, apologize for your industry. I realize that, he, you know, what he kind of says here is, like, it's not me. I'm not the marketing team. Mm-hmm. I get that, but don't support them in it.
Yeah.
Like, that's screwed up, man.
Yeah, put your foot down and say, hey, this is how Hollywood's doing business and it's wrong. Or, I don't know, show a little directorial fortitude and say, hey, this is my movie. I'm the one that has to answer to it to the critics, to the studio, to the right. audiences. And, you know, and it's funny that you bring up trust, because that's all he had to go on with this movie. Nobody knew what to expect from this movie. Like, you trusted the Star Wars name. And if you'd seen Godzilla, you're like, okay, let's see what this guy can do with it. But I mean, was largely an untested director in an untested realm of filmmaking where Star Wars is concerned. And when you talk Star Wars, that's a big portion of filmmaking. And he did it. Like, we all extended him a mass amount of credit, and he paid off. I mean, he paid it off. But to know that he's going into it with this almost disregard for the trust that we gave him. It's a little disturbing.
And maybe we're piling it on a bit thick in his case, but like, if you're interviewed specifically about something like this, my opinion is like, if you're okay with it internally, you probably don't want to acknowledge that publicly. Yeah. You probably just want to be like, oh, well, I'm not on the marketing team.
Right.
Obviously, they used some stuff that didn't end up in the final cut of the film. And just leave it at that and just be like, yeah, they used some stuff that didn't end up in the final cut. We had to restructure. And just be very, you know, kind of cold and demonstrative with it. You know, don't leave it open for interpretation. Don't leave it open for further questioning. Just be like, yep, yeah, that's what happened. And that's, you know, that's all I'm going to say about it. Because obviously he can't come out and be like, well, I really hate that Disney did that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's going to be not so good for his career. You know, I mean, you don't want to criticize the single largest entertainment, you know, entity in the world at this point.
Mickey Mouse, like, I got your rat poison.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
All right. You know what? To bring back some cheer into our lives, some happiness, we love the Loot Crate. Loot Crate is a great sponsor of the show. They've backed us since the beginning. We would definitely appreciate their efforts here. And this month, being January, its theme is Origins. And you're going to get Superman, Captain America, Mario, and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Now, here's a note. What if all four of those were originated the same way? You pick one. You know, pick Super Serum, pick Ooze. That'd be hilarious if Superman got his power from Ooze. Right, Chris? You would love that, wouldn't you?
Well, didn't he? Because when a Kryptonian mother and a Kryptonian father love each other.
Oh my god.
Well, there you go. You're gonna get a Superman branded sample cup in this month's Loot Crate. Outcomes may actually vary to your particular box.
Clean it up. Whoa.
Not what I meant, Chris. Thank you for making it worse. Of course, you get the monthly t-shirt and pin. You've got to the 19th of January until midnight Eastern to subscribe and receive this month's crate of this awesome stuff. And then if you want to do that, make sure you go to lootcrate.com/giant-size-team-up. Enter code giant-size-team-up to get some money off your subscription.
Charles.
What?
Does it come with Martha Wayne's pearl necklace?
No, it can be Batman easily converted to.
Kids, just ask your parents about that one. So,
talking about Origins. That's a key moment. It's been shown to us so many times.
It is a key moment. what are you guys playing? Did you get anything cool for the holidays, Christmas gifts, anything? You get any cool new games you're playing?
Well, it's going to be too late by the time this goes out, because we're recording on the 3rd of January. But I played some Overwatch over the holidays, because there was a holiday promotion for that, as well as some Heroes of the Storm, because there was a cross-promotion where Blizzard lured me into playing 15 games of Heroes of the Storm with a buddy in order to unlock a super amazing Oni skin for Genji. And then I got kind of hooked and was like, oh, this is kind of fun. We were playing with some friends and stuff, so we just kept powering through. And they offered a promotion where you could, if you played 25 games, you unlocked some more stuff. And then if you played 30 games, you ended up unlocking 5 characters for Heroes of the Storm for free and some other cool stuff that went with it. So it was a really cool cross-promotion. One of the things that I love about Blizzard is that they are willing to do stuff like that. Like, they cross-promote their games in the other games. Like, go play this game, you know, get to this level or do this X amount of stuff and you get to unlock something in the other game. And it's pretty cool. It's a good way to get people exposed to their other titles and enjoy them as well. But I've also picked up Warframe again. I've been playing that for about a week or so, kind of like crazy. Like, I played like 8 hours plus yesterday.
That's a lot crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to know what's crazy? Our good friend Tony P. Henderson over at Geek Versus, he apparently takes a stay-at-home vacation every year at the end of the year. I only learned this recently. And this time he has been trying to beat Final Fantasy 15 before he goes back to work. Oh. I'm like, holy cow. Now that's a level of crazy playing, Eric Klotz.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, you're probably, most Final Fantasies, you can expect a good 40 to 50 hours of gameplay.
Yeah. That's if you don't do the side stories.
Right. If you don't do all the side stuff.
Yeah. So what about you, Chris? What's your flavor this month?
Okay, so I don't get to play a whole lot of video games anymore because of the kids, but with all the price drops on Disney Infinity, we picked up a whole bunch of sets of those just pre-Christmas. I've been playing that quite a bit with the kid. With my son, my four-year-old, we haven't done anything really outside of the toy box, so I haven't played like any actual levels yet. He just has fun.
You're not missing much.
He just has fun being Groot and trying to slap me out of the air. So, but, you know, I've got my Boba Fett figure, so then I go pwn him a little bit.
That's Chris. That's how Chris feels like a man. He beats up a four-year-old.
I push him down all the time.
In a video game.
No, in real life. You see me walking through the mall and there's a display stand in the middle of the floor. That's going. WWE style, the kid's going through it. But, I mean, I've picked up a couple little mobile games that I've been just playing around with a little bit. Like, I picked up Blendoku 2. I really like Blendoku. The first one, it was good. And then Dragon Ball Z Dokkan Battle, which it's okay. I don't know how much longer I'm going to stick with it. So that's about it on the gaming front.
When you do a battle in that Dragon Ball Z game, does it take about 3 hours?
It does, actually, yeah. It's the power-up is horrible.
It's like you go to punch somebody, and then you have to like set your phone down and let the timer recharge until the punch can go an inch
and
further,
it drains
right?
your like, battery, because the whole time it's charging, it's just vibrating. Yep. And it's
exactly. Yeah,
totally. My wife likes it, but
we're starting the new year off in a real saucy manner, my friend.
What about you, Charles? What are you playing?
You know, I got very, very lucky. I'm a huge fan of the Burnout series. Just I love crashing cars, and the whole heart of that game series is it's racing, but it's not for the racing elite. You don't tweak your car. You don't get new tires. I don't give a crap about what degree of drift is on my car. I want to smash it into stuff. And that was free in December on the Games with Gold for Xbox. So I got that and was playing it. My kids, I have a 11-year-old son and 10-year-old daughter. Then I got two younger ones, but those two, they don't fall far from the tree. My daughter has been watching Jacksepticeye on YouTube. And he plays Walking Dead game. Well, I own the whole first series. And so my daughter wanted to get into it, and she got into it and actually asked for the second series, the season two. And somebody bought it for Christmas. So I'm going to get to play that with her. And then the Telltale, which is by Telltale, which is one of my favorite companies out there. My son wanted the Batman game, my 11-year-old, and he got it. So we're playing through that. And that's, man, if you like those story, choose your own adventure things where you don't really control it, you just kind of have some influence over it, it's epic. If you like Batman and you like that choose your own adventure thing, the Batman one is epic. But I do find with these, you have to be a fan of the genre or the content in it.
Sure.
Because my daughter, who is eating up Walking Dead and playing through it as fast as she can, did not like the Batman one. But my son and I both enjoyed Batman. I like them all, personally.
Well, who asked her for her opinion, Charles?
That's right, little girl. I give you your opinion in this house. No, that's how we operate.
Well, if you raised her right, you would.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I'm doing good enough that she likes to play the games. So it's fun. But I was actually, I was gifted a Final Fantasy 15. I am a huge fan of the Final Fantasy games. One of the few games I've beat multiple versions of in my gaming lifetime. Actually, and you guys will get it because you're, I hope you get it because you're gamers. If not, you're just heartless bastards. But I was playing, I want to say it's Final Fantasy 10. And you know, like you said, Klotz, you're investing 40, 50, 60 hours of your life in this game. Mm-hmm. And at the time, when I was first married, I would work a whole day away from the house, and I'd be home for 2 days. Well, my wife worked a normal 8-hour shift. She'd leave at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, wouldn't come home till 11. So I'd spend 8 hours pretty much in a day playing this game, right, for the most part. Mm-hmm. And I get to the end of it, and in one of the Final Fantasy games that you play, your character dies at the end. And I did not see that coming. And I would, and just as it happened, and I'm processing, I mean, I did 7.5 hours on this game, right? Just that day, on top of the 40 I've already put in, I've invested life into it and all this other. And just as this thing happens and I'm processing it, tears are starting to come out of my eyes. My wife comes home from work going, are you effing kidding me? You're crying for a cartoon game? I'm like, shut up! Go to your room! but yeah, it moves me. So to be able to get Final Fantasy 15, it's been a blast. And I mean, you put the time in. I've put, I think, 15 to 20 hours into this thing. I'm barely into chapter 2 of it, which I love.
Well, knowing Paul, now he's gonna troll you on Facebook with nothing but pictures and memes of that character.
It was, I want to say it was Final Fantasy 10 that made me do that. Anyway, and then finally, Marvel Tsum Tsum, I got into right after Marvel Avengers Alliance died. I was pissed off at first because it's such a, looks like such a little kid game and you know, money grab. And it ends up being an actual fun puzzle, you know, standard. You connect these together and they disappear with the actual Marvel stuff underneath of strategy. And the characters have powers and you have to figure out how the powers work together. And it's not for everybody, but it's deep enough that it gets me happy. Thanos actually just arrived in the game, and the way they do the challenges are a lot of fun, and you have to balance which characters you have, and that's fun. But it's also shallow enough that non-Marvel people will like it, and I got my wife to start playing because I knew she liked puzzle games of that kind, and because it does very much help to have friends in any kind of mobile game you have. And I'm very much still enjoying Marvel Tsum Tsum after a few months of playing it. And it's still cutesy, but it's definitely got that underscoring. Now, if you're a hardcore gamer who, by the way, love you guys, but you're still crying about MAA, come on. It's the new year. It's time to move on, man. It's time to move on. This will not satisfy that itch at all. If MAA was a magic unto itself, where it had its downfalls for sure. I mean, it's one of the reasons Klotz quit playing it is if you got behind to a certain point, you were never going to catch up. That's a massive downfall, but it definitely had a specific niche that it filled that has yet to be
duplicated,
matched. Yeah, duplicated. So this is not that, but if you like, you want to find again gamers. I imagine our audience is mostly male. I know we have some females, but statistically speaking, I imagine we attract the mostly male audience. But if you want your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your wife, your husband to play with you, try Marvel Tsum Tsum. But it's definitely a filthy casual kind of game, but you get into it, you play.
Perfect for you, right?
You know what, Klotz? When I can sit down with my wife, she's like, "I got a Thanos boss to beat. I need your help," and I can pull up my phone and I can have that game time. Absolutely.
You know what?
The other
I would like credit for all of the innuendos that I just left. I mean, that was nothing but
credit given, sir. Credit given. You may spend that in this store later on. And we're about to actually tackle, my wife is a fan of the Lego games, and we're about to tackle Lego Jurassic World. One of my kids got that for Christmas as well, and the family loves that, so we're gonna jump on that, but I haven't actually opened that one yet. So that's been what I am playing. Let's talk about what we're watching, because I know Klotz has got a good topic that we're gonna hit right before we wrap this up. He's got a really deep topic about 2016 and everything that went on there. But what are you guys watching? You know, we're talking about what we're playing, of course. What are you into watching right now?
Well, I guess I'll go first. On Chris Wisdom's recommendation, I've been watching Plebs on Netflix, or not Netflix, Hulu. Hulu, which is, to give you a brief description, it is a British comedy centered around three young, poor gentlemen who live in ancient Rome, but speak as modern Brits and, you know, this with modern slang and and it's really just, it uses ancient Rome as the, you know, the backdrop to just classic comedy. Really funny, really fun. Like, that's the other part, is it's just like, it, you know, the episodes are short and it's just so good. Loved it. Like, you know, binged it really quickly in a couple days. It's not very long either. There's only three series so far. And I think the first season was 6 episodes. The second was 8. And I think the third was 8 as well. What's that?
I said that sounds right.
Chris? Yeah. It was good. Good fun. What else have I don't know that I've been really watching much else lately, believe it or not. How about you, Chris? What have you been up to?
So because Mike pimped it so hard, I finally decided to get caught up on Justice League Action. And it's at this point, I think there's 18 episodes out. I've been doing nothing but binging it since this morning. I'm on episode 9, and it is so very good. It's insane how good this show is. It's if you are a kid looking for a cool superhero cartoon to watch, this is the show. If you are an adult that grew up in the 90s with Batman the Animated Series on up, to include Animaniacs and Tiny Toon Adventures, this show is also for you. If you understand the history of where this show's coming from, this is another Bruce Timm and Paul Dini thing. At no point does this show talk down to its audience. It always assumes that even the smallest or even the youngest viewers are going to get the jokes at some point. They might not get them today, but they'll hit puberty and watch it, and then they'll get them. But so they leave no joke out. There's plenty of visual cues. I was just telling the guys today before the episode aired, if you want just a good primer episode, don't watch the first four episodes. Are the show comes out, it's 15-minute episodes, and they do them 2 a week on Cartoon Network. I would go to YouTube, find the Batman the Animated Series opening sequence, just the first minute and a half of the show, with the song. Watch that, and then watch episode 9, and it will it gives you the story of that opening. It is so awesome. The first four episodes did one of the coolest things. Dietrich Bader plays Booster Gold in the show, and it was such a perfect role for him. But he voiced Batman as well in which one is it? One of the Batman cartoons. It was the funnier one.
Batman Brave and the
Bold.
Yes,
Brave and the Bold. Yeah, there you go. So he voiced Batman. Well, Kevin Conroy.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Kevin Conroy does Batman's voice in Justice League Action, and there's a scene where Batman and Booster Gold spar, and Booster Gold gets beat, and he's all like, "How did that happen?" And Kevin Conroy Batman voice says, "Because I am the Batman." And you're like, yeah, exactly. But so then you go from that to like one of the most egregious sins that any TV show can make. It says the name of the show in the show, which always bothers me. But not only that, but they use it as a battle cry. And
wait, they say Justice League Action? Yeah.
And not they, but Kevin Conroy says it. it's so horribly lame, but you're just like, oh, the show's so good, I can forgive it because everything else is so wonderful. And I can't speak any more highly of this. The animation's great, the storytelling is great, the pacing is wonderful, and in those little 15-minute segments, they do a really good job of telling a complete story when it's just a single episode. In the first four episodes, they do a good job of making them self-contained but still being a part of that four episode arc. Other than that, I'm watching, I just started Chance on Hulu, the Hugh Laurie one where he's, was he a
How is therapist? That?
It's all right. It's, I came out of the first episode not knowing what's going on. Like, I think I'm trying to figure out how much of this is like, Fight Club, and I'm trying to figure out how many of these people are in Hugh Laurie's head. But I don't know. I could be completely wrong. And then, I finally, we got HBO Now. So I'm finally getting to watch Newsroom, and Newsroom is insanely good. Good Lord, do I love Aaron Sorkin. If I was president of the United States of America, that's That's my speechwriter right there, is Aaron Sorkin.
Man, the way Newsroom opens with him just breaking that student down, I found that clip and just posted it for months on my Facebook page when that thing first came out. I was like, no, this is how I see our United States. How is everybody going, oh, we're patriotic? No, I could not have said it better, literally. Aaron Sorkin wrote magic with that speech. Mm-hmm. He loves his country, but let's be real for a second. You know, it's awesome. Yeah, dude. You're going to – it's good stuff right there. So I guess it's up to me now. Well, since you have HBO now, sir, I just discovered this the other day. I haven't watched it yet. Batman the Killing Joke is on HBO.
All right. I own that, man. Come on. I own that when the Blu-ray came out.
Amateur. You pay money. You got to know how to do this shit for free, man. but I haven't bought it. I haven't seen it. So I'm very much – if you are like me and didn't make it to the Fathom event or spend the – What was it for the Blu-ray? Was it reasonable, like under $20, or was it like $30?
No, it was. I got it when it, that first weekend when it comes out or whatever at Target, so it's like $14.99 or something for the Blu-ray.
All right, well, there you go. It's not bad actually. But if you haven't bought it, your chance to watch it is now on HBO. I saw, again, referencing our friend Tony Henderson, he was talking about the OA, which I had not heard of. So I'm like, I read it as the OA. I'm like, what is this, a police procedural for Green Lantern Corps? I don't understand what you're watching. But there was some back and forth about it. I got to tell you, according, especially watching what they said, it's not for everybody. But it intrigued me enough to try it. It's on Netflix, a Netflix original. And I've watched most of the first episode. I ran out of time today to finish it. It's slow, but actually the mystery, I think, Chris, you would like this because you're talking about Westworld and how the mystery just keeps you there and you want to know what happens at the end kind of deal. Throughout the first episode, I'm going, wow, it's got a little bit of a cultish vibe. It definitely has a little bit of a sci-fi vibe, but it's definitely very slow. It's very paced in its way it's delivering the story so far. So, I'm finding it interesting enough right now to definitely want to go on to the second and third episode and do that. I'm going to check out The Travelers on Netflix. It's a sci-fi thing where Will from Will and Grace comes back from the future, where it's a dystopian society to help correct our bad choices in 2016.
Hmm.
So maybe 2017, but it said in the year 2016. And even saw an interview with him where it's not them actually coming back. It sounds like a 12 Monkeys kind of thing where they inhabit the bodies of somebody current. So they have to live out the lives of that person without knowing the person or what's going on and still have to do the futuristic stuff. Sounds interesting. And then I've heard a lot of great things about The Magicians from Syfy. So that'd be, you know, sci-fi after it got a disease and changed its name. So... have you guys seen The Magicians? I know it's been out for a little while. It just hit Netflix. That's why I'm going to check it out.
I've heard good things. I haven't checked it out yet, though.
Yeah. Did Black Mirror, and I get what you're saying, Klotz. You know, honestly, the first season, the first episode of Black Mirror ruined me. When you say cringe, I immediately think of that episode. But beyond that, I get what you're saying. It's a harsh look at society. I saw the first episode. I don't think I've gotten past the first one of the newest season. But I did see the first episode, which is all about social media, essentially, and it's really well done. It was really good.
Oh, yeah. It just made me wildly uncomfortable, like, watching her life. And, well, I don't want to give too much away.
Yeah.
Did you guys get the ringtones? Like, I think a week after the episode premiered, then they released those, the uprating and the downrating.
That's funny.
No, I did not get this. I do think I want my kids who are starting to get into social media a little bit, I want them to watch this because they're definitely getting caught up in making comments on people's videos. I'm like, you're effing 11 and 10. You've got nothing to say about a video. Nothing. I'm going to let you watch this stuff under my supervision, but you are not making comments on anything.
I would warn you against that with one of the episodes out of the new season.
No, I just want them to watch that social media one. That's it.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. If you're going to show your kids anything Black Mirror, make sure you pre-screen it, because almost all of the episodes are wildly inappropriate. But yeah, one of them in particular is a little too heavy. I mean, it was so heavy it kind of made me sick to my stomach.
Ooh, all right.
Yeah.
So, quick question about Batman the Killing Joke, because you haven't seen it yet, correct?
No,
I've seen it.
So, did Jason and David not tell you what to think about it?
That'd be Jason and David of DC on Screen, one of our beloved shows on the Giant Size Team Up Network. No, they gave their review. I thought their review. I still want to see it. You're such a. You got those pink slips for any clots? Because I think we might can find somebody at this point.
I dug them out.
I did watch The Suicide Squad with my kids last night, the extended cut. And there's not enough there to make it. It's not like Batman versus Superman where it's a different movie. There's enough little extra. I was like, okay, this is more like a director's cut feel of a little bit extra. You know, it fleshed out a little bit here, made the ending. Okay, in a nonsensical, I still stand by my review of it's a 90s action comedy or a comic book flick. It doesn't have to make sense. It's comic book physics. It's comic book magic. It's out there. But some of the character development makes a little bit more sense with the extended cut. But as a whole, it's still the exact same film. And either you're going to like it or you're not. It's just comic book.
I will wait to buy it until it has a sticker on it for the next, you know, whatever.
The free ticket to the next
Yeah, the free ticket to the next DC movie.
That makes sense.
When basically I get to buy it for free. That's when I will buy it.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, it's...
I mean, kudos to Warner Brothers for doing that, because I wouldn't have bought a number of DC Blu-rays until they did that recently, so...
Yeah, I love that. I do love that. I bought the Batman trilogy, even though the third part is not that great, because I had the free tickets to the newest thing that was
still
coming
better
out.
Better than BVS. Oh, sorry. You're fine. Thought I had it muted.
All right. And then the last two things I want to talk about. I just started Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency, which is Elijah Woods. Never been a huge fan of Elijah Woods. But
He's BBC. Good.
Wow.
Elijah Woods awesome, man. Have you seen, what's the name of that?
The one where he's the dog?
No, he's not the dog, but he has the dog.
Oh, he has the dog, but the dog's like a human dressed in a thing or whatever?
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen it.
That show's incredible. Mm-hmm. Both versions of it. The Australian original is good, but the American version is awesome.
Yeah, he's a decent actor. I liked him. I started watching him as a kid when he was, I think the show was called North.
Yeah, North.
The movie was called North. Yeah, I watched that and something before that that caught my eye. Of course, I've seen all the Lord of the Rings, but that's a whole different thing. It doesn't matter how good you are. I mean, the Lord of the Rings is a whole different thing to me. But yeah, I saw the description. I love BBC America, and I just got the app because that's the only way I can really see Doctor Who right now, the Christmas special, which I'm so looking forward to watching. Doctor Who is just my jam, man. But it was advertising Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. You can binge watch the whole first season right now on their app. And it advertised it as a mix between Doctor Who and Sherlock Holmes. I'm like, all right, that sounds interesting. Watch the first episode. Hilarious. I mean, it's definitely intriguing. It's definitely a little bit of, there's some sci-fi. There's some weird stuff going on here. And Elijah Woods is great so far. He's really fun to watch. So,
The Doctor Who special, I did see that. That was good fun. But also, Sherlock is back, too.
Yes, Sherlock is back. The first episode of season 4 is out right now.
It's a doozy.
Did you see the news the other day that Benedict Cumberbatch has like direct lineage to Sir Arthur Conan Doyle?
I saw a Facebook thing, but
I wanted to. I should have said the headline. Yeah, I wanted to research that. Maybe it's just an ad for 23andMe or Ancestry.com.
Wow. I mean, honestly, it plays nothing into his excellent level of acting, but that is an interesting fact if it's true. So I did see that headline. All right, you know what? I want to give you a quick way to reach us, and then Klaus is going to hit us with 2016, and we're going to have a discussion about that. You know what? Oh, okay. I got myself confused in the notes, so I'm going to take it back a second. All right, right before we hit this 2016, you know, we're going to review the year. Klaus has got some discussion he wants to bring up about the year, and I think it's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. It goes back to the heart of what we do, which is talk about things openly and honestly. We're going to do that right here after we do the ad. So please stick around, give us a little love, listen to the ad, and we'll be right back with more. And we're back, as in 2016 isn't, and it took a whole lot of people with it, and there's a lot of uproar about it. But Klaus, you wanted to talk about that, and specifically about how people were reacting to that year. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. Basically, you know, 2016, there's been a tremendous amount of sentiment with a certain F-bomb aimed at 2016. Because we've lost an incredible list of you know, famous celebrities who were, some were artists, some were, you know, entertainers, some were, like, just incredible people, you know, musicians, actors and actresses, you know, people behind the scene, all kinds of stuff. And also, you know, a lot of prominent other, other important or impactful people. And so one of the things that I've seen kind of crop up is obviously there's a lot of people who are upset, you know, when somebody they care about passes, they get upset and they post about it. You know, obviously in the wake of Carrie Fisher, just passing, you know, a little more than a week ago, you know, we all reeled from that because, you know, we here at Breaking the Panel, we recorded our Rogue One panel that day, you know, and so that was kind of brutal for us. But one of the things I wanted to address is, you know, the context of our loss that we feel when somebody we followed passes. Because I've seen some sentiment from people who were basically like, you know, oh, they're just famous people. You don't know them. So why do you care? Like, why does it affect you? Why are you upset? And all this stuff. And then it's often accompanied by someone saying, oh, well, I lost my grandmother or this or that. And they, you know, they try to basically undermine or invalidate people's reactions, you know, and feelings about losing somebody that meant something to them, even if they didn't know them personally. Right. I just want to talk for a moment about the fact that, you know, my belief is, you know, people who are famous that can, you know, contribute to art, television, music, movies, you know, all kinds of media, people who are prominent contributors to science and exploration and education, you know, basically all the different aspects of public life, they inspire us. You know, they bring us entertainment, they bring us joy, they enrich our lives. Maybe they expand our knowledge or, you know, just provide us with laughs or tears or whatever it may be. And sometimes, you know, the loss is truly tragic. You know, we lost Bowie this year. And we lost him to cancer and, you know, arguably too soon. Carrie Fisher to her heart attack way too soon. You know, many of the folks we've lost, you know, should have had another decade or more, you know, in them. And it's just really unfortunate and heartbreaking. And, you know, I also experienced personal loss this year. And I know a lot of people who have. I had an uncle pass away from cancer this year, and it affected me and it affected my family. It was, you know, relatively sudden. And, you know, it still doesn't, to me, it doesn't invalidate my sense of loss of any of these, you know, celebrities. It doesn't invalidate my empathy towards others who lost somebody that they cared about. And I'd really like to just throw it out to the community, and you guys can chime in here and, you know, let me know what you think as well. But just throw it out to the community, anybody who hears this, like, try to be a, you know, a force of positivity out there like we try to do here on the show. I mean, sometimes we dump on things when we review something that's especially heinous. But for the most part, we try to find something of worth in everything. And I'd argue that, you know, if somebody's reeling from a loss, like, acknowledge that it's legitimate. You know, I mean, it just... we all get impacted in different ways. You know, I, for example, Rogue One, you know, I've talked at length with a few people, like, the end of that film, I tear up, you know, I cry bro tears. I'm not afraid to admit that publicly, particularly in the relationship between two of the characters that are in the Rogue One crew, you know, and their relationship. And, you know, we talked about that on the panel show, and you can go back and listen to that for further insight into that. But, like, that really hits me, you know, it's really powerful. And I've only spent, you know, a little more than 2 hours with those characters, you know what I mean? So it's, you know, and you look at someone like, for, you know, to go back to Carrie Fisher or Bowie or, you know, something like that. These are people who had decades to inspire us. Many of us grew up with them in our lives. You know, they were characters on media that we consumed growing up. They were, you know, voices or made sounds that we heard, and it became a part of us. You know, and so, you know, here coming from me, just be a force of positivity out there. And if you see somebody trying to tear someone else down, jump in and just say something. You don't have to attack them or anything. Just be like, hey, you know, it's cool. We all process things differently. And it's okay if you don't feel a strong sense of loss, but it's also okay if we do. So, little editorial for you guys. Go ahead.
Yeah, letting people feel their feelings is important. I don't know. So I think some people go after people like that because in a way, when you're posting it on Facebook, you're kind of putting it in their face. I'm not saying it's right. I'm absolutely saying let people do their thing. And throughout this year, and in fact, I just checked Chris Wisdom's Facebook page. He still has an F2016 icon as his freaking photo on Facebook. I'm like, dude, it's 2017. Get over it now.
He can't quit you.
I'd process differently, right? When I heard Prince died, I'm like, oh man, that's sad. You know, I really liked his work. I thought he had a lot more in him. When I processed other people at the beginning of the year, I was like, that's sad. You know, they're a human being, and that loss is a loss for somebody's family, especially. But you know, it's just a loss of life. And yeah, they were creators. They influenced the world in greater ways than most people. But then as it started happening, I saw personally Facebook go crazy. And, oh my God, this world. Oh. I'm like, apparently you never grew up with grandparents in your life and the TV show called Entertainment Tonight. Because that was pretty much a regular weekly thing when I was around my grandparents and my parents is hey, this week, Abe Kubota, you know, whatever. You know, they'd say, so it's these people died who you as a child went, oh, yeah, I kind of saw them on TV. I don't get it. And your grandparents are like, oh, Lawrence Welk. Okay, that's a good one. Lawrence Welk passed away. Okay, I watched him do crappy music on TV. That was my opinion as a child, right? I was forced to do this stuff that I didn't like and didn't get. But my grandparents are like, oh, my God, he passed away. Every generation has this. It's just freaking louder this year because of Facebook. And while I'm not telling you to stop being sad, I get it. We had many discussions on the show about different things. In fact, when Prince died, we talked about his contributions to comic book and the different things that he affected. But people, death happens all the time. And if you're going to, I'm talking to the people who cry on Facebook. If you're going to define your life by other people's death, you're never going to get anywhere in 2017. You know, I don't understand some of it. You know, I definitely understand feeling loss. You know, my friend Audrey, Booze and Phasers, right? One of the other great shows on the network, Audrey Kearns. She's an actress and obviously a female by referencing her as she. So she definitely feels the loss of any actor because it's some people she's actually met, some people she's actually worked with. She's closer to that community. And then, of course, Carrie Fisher passing away hit her hard because as a child, that was a role model. As an actress, she's still a role model. You know, I get that. She's going to feel it differently than I do. At no point, you know, did I trash anybody for being upset about it. But I do want to give a word of caution to some people who don't feel it as much is when we see you posting and that's all you're doing is posting. And I got to say, Chris, I almost unfollowed you for a minute when you put the F2016 on there. I was like, really? That's how you want to define the rest of your year as we end the year 2016. Is that? Okay, your choice. Here's what I recommend to everybody else. I'm just going to sit back and understand my page is my page. Your page is your page, just as it is your life. You know, I'm not going to go tell you, Chris, come on, man. Buck up, baby. You got to have a better life. You know, he did it because he did it. And he still feels the way he feels. And I feel the way I feel. And we've never had one single discussion about it, have we? So that's how your Facebook should be. You don't like what he's doing?
There's don't worry about it. It's your Facebook reason, page. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what the mouse wheel or the scroll bar is for. Just move on.
Past. I know. Oh, my God. In fact, when Carrie Fisher died, I just had to get off Facebook for a couple of days. Because I knew, because I have a lot of geeks in my world. I have a lot of passionate people in my world. I knew it was going to be post after post of how they missed her. Good on you. So I got off of Facebook for a couple of days and said, all right, I'm going to let you guys have your moment. And I'm going to just step back and be in my own life, and I'll come back, and we'll all move on. And I mean, it's sad. She's a human life. She did a lot for geeks everywhere. Fun person, for what I've seen on screen and interviews. But I didn't cry about it. And if you did, that's fine. But I just, you make your own choices. I did like some of the few positive posts that I saw that said, hey, these are some women that you missed out on that who died this year. And it was a slideshow of here's this person who did this, and her work led to, I forget the science thing, but it's scientists, it was politicians, it was non-celebrities who had passed away, who also influenced the world. That was a great positive post. A negative post, I didn't catch if you brought it up in your decoration there, Klotz, but you brought it up before the show. There were people who were like, oh yeah, you're not crying about these people and posting up other important people who died. And That's a bad way to handle that. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, yeah, if you want to say people who've changed lives, let's Facebook post about everybody who's been influential. If your mom dies, I do not unfollow you for being teary-eyed for a while about it.
Right.
She was influential to your life. And that's your right to post.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you know, obviously, if somebody close to you in your life passes, you're going to feel that very deeply, you know?
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that you also won't feel the loss of someone who, you know, that you grew up watching or you came to love, you know? I mean, that's the thing. It's like, Bowie is a great example. I didn't discover Bowie until 2009. Like, I knew he existed. I had seen him around. But the only thing I really knew about him was that Flight of the Conchords had a whole episode devoted to spoofing him. And I loved that episode. I knew enough about Bowie to understand why that was funny. And I liked some of his songs, but I didn't know most of them. But then I had the opportunity, at the time I worked at Hot Topic for about a year, and his Greatest Hits was available on the in-store audio system. And so I put it on because, you know, I mean, what better opportunity, you know, I'm doing work anyways. I'm talking to people. Let me listen to, you know, and see what all the hubbub's about. And I became a huge fan. And I did that with a couple other artists that were available at the time, too. And it changed my musical life to a certain degree. I truly came to respect the man and his body of work. And I really love seeing people who are inspired by him. I like to see their covers. I like to see, you know, music that's been inspired by his work. Like, that's the thing. You know, he's an icon. So, like, for me, he's relatively recent in my life, you know, in the last decade or so.
Sure.
Becoming a, you know, but it doesn't mean that I wasn't completely shattered when he passes suddenly. You know, it's like, it sucks, and it's okay to feel that way. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, you wouldn't go – if somebody's mother or grandmother or whatever passed away and they posted on Facebook, you wouldn't go say, oh, well, you know, why do you – you shouldn't feel that way. You would never do that. Yeah. You would never do that.
I want to see about your granny. Yeah, I know.
You know, so that's the thing is just respect that people feel different ways about different things. I mean, obviously, if somebody's posting about it like 10 posts a day every day, then it's kind of like, all right, well, something else is wrong. You know, it's not just the sense of loss at that point. They, you know, there might be something else going on in their life or whatever. And then maybe you might want to reach out and just be like, hey, are you okay? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
One of the other big themes that's come out, you know, Carrie Fisher being a big example of it, Prince being an example of it, is that these are people who struggled with some mental health issues too. And not saying that in a negative way, saying that these are people who, you know, I mean, Carrie Fisher was bipolar. She's diagnosed. She took medication. You know, her dog Gary, that's so famous, that's a service dog that was to help her stay grounded, you know, and stay comfortable, especially in social situations. You know, these are people who overcame, at least for, you know, at some point of their life, they became aware of and then try to tackle these issues in their life. And, you know, we can respect that. And if you see somebody who's really taken something hard, reach out and offer to at least be a shoulder, you know, or a you know, somebody to listen, an ear to listen, you know. So it's at least as long as they're people you care about, you know what I mean? If it's just somebody you don't know, I don't expect you to go crazy, but. Yeah, so just stop dumping on people.
Well,
people.
And I think
it's 2017.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Chris.
I think the heart of it is don't, when you're standing on the outside looking in, don't try to assume that you can understand somebody's relationship with somebody. Like, you don't understand why that person is affected so much by the loss that they've been notified of. I mean, when you talk about Carrie Fisher, I mean, you're talking about Star Wars, Blues Brothers. How many people in our circles, like how many times, how many hours of that those people's lives have they spent with Carrie Fisher? You know, whether she was in the guise of Princess Leia or not, that's still somebody that they've known for a large chunk of their life and invested a lot of time and emotion into. So it's easy to just dismiss it as, oh, that's a celebrity you never met, but you don't understand the other, you don't understand how they process that on the inside, because you don't understand the relationship. And you should never question that. Like, I'm not particularly close with my parents, but I would never begrudge somebody that was upset that their parents died, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't understand the nature of somebody else's relationships or attachments. And you know, when you poo poo on it, that's making broad assumptions that you have no right to make.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say, I reshared a memory from last year, a motivational meme thing I'd created about coffee, about entering into 2016. I'm eager to taste all the coffees that had yet been untasted, or something like that, you know? And I reshared it because I liked it, and it was cool work that I did. And I'm not quoting it quite right, but I put it out there. And Nikolai, our good friend Nikolai, right? He says, but this threw you off because, you know, that was a horrible year. All your childhood died. I went, no, my childhood died with Jim Henson. The rest of this crap didn't really faze me, man. It's all right. You know, I had a great year. And that's the thing. To define your year by other people's deaths, depending on, I guess, the level of connection. For me personally, I'm speaking for myself here. I don't understand that. I look back over 2016 going, I'm breathing. My family's ahead of the game from where they were last year. And while things are tight going into 2017 and I'm in a whole different space and I'm looking down a whole different unknown universe coming up now, I still had a great year because all my bills were paid. My family was taken care of. We did some great things with the kids. I did some great things for my wife. I had some personal achievements this year. And yeah, it is sad that these people died. But to label it a horrible year, I mean, if Prince was my cousin, I might think differently. If Princess Leia was my aunt, I might think differently. But as a celebrity dying, I say it's sad, but my personal year was a good one.
That's true. And that's me taking it from the microcosm, and that's fine. But you know, where I'm concerned, my F-2016 is not all wrapped up in celebrity death. There is plenty of other crap that went on in 2016 that will affect us for a while, and
like the death.
Oh yeah, so. There's some stuff.
For sure. Yeah, there's some stuff. We're just gonna neatly dodge around this, landmine. Yeah.
Well, the fact that you're still employed by breaking the panel is gonna haunt us in 2017. That's for sure. That's gonna be with it. So let's finish up. We got a few things to say. Klaus, you said it well. Quit dumping on people. You know, that's
except for Charles. It is okay to dump on Charles. I'm going to go ahead and hit him with the email address again.
BTP at GiantSizeTeamUp.com. We have a great iTunes review, but before that, I got a package today, and I'm not sure where it generated from, so I want to say thank you on the show to whoever. Shut up, Chris.
That was Paul. Paul did it.
My package is whole and complete and better than yours. So, but now I got a Star Wars Smuggler's Bounty box delivered to my door today. And don't know where it came from, but whoever you are out there, thank you. It was really cool. I opened it up. It was a box full of magic, man. I'm not going to spoil it because I know they just came out. So I'll wait the 2 weeks before I talk about what was in the box. And I'll tell you guys out there if you want to know, but it was really cool stuff. And it made me very happy. And thank you to wherever that came from. So we dealt with, of course, the comment. We want to, if you bring something to our show, we're going to probably talk about it first, which we did today. That was awesome. This is from iTunes. Another review. It says, breaking the panel breaks your face, by a wizard of sales in the USA. I first heard of this from the From the Helicarrier podcast. I adore it and listen regularly. So thank you, Wizard of Sales. Well, we appreciate that. And it was a 5-star review.
Hot review.
I just want it to be noted that 5-star reviews didn't happen before I got on the show, but now they seem to be a pretty regular thing.
Oh. Because you keep creating fake accounts to go leave I appreciate it anyway.
You don't ask how the sausage gets made, son.
Chris, I have to remind you that correlation is not causation. So,
All right. Well, it's been another great episode. We definitely appreciate you, Jeffrey James, for writing in. And and being a part of the discussion, because while it's not an ongoing live active discussion, it is a discussion nonetheless. So thank you for that. And we're going to move on into 2017. We got a lot of great stuff to look forward to this year. We got some Guardians of the Galaxy. We've got Justice League. We've got a bunch of other superhero movies slated for this year, and other great geekery things going on. So
be a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be, if nothing else, it's going to give us plenty to talk about. So tune in next week to hear what Chris Wisdom has to say. F Chris Wisdom in 2016. We need the new 2017 model. That's what you're going to hear us say next week. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.